Well, let's turn together to what we read from Luke's Gospel earlier on, Luke 6. Here's the big theme to this piece of teaching that Jesus gives. Here's the one thing that we need to kind of impress on ourselves as we look at this. And it's to say that obedience is the mark of belonging to the new kingdom. Obedience is the mark of belonging to the new kingdom. Jesus is teaching his disciples, and he's setting out what it is like to be his. We saw last time, didn't we, that Jesus is calling a new people. He had these disciples, these leaders from among his people. They were reflections there of the way God had met with his people on the mountain at Sinai as he gathered the people together. The fact that there were 12 of them, reflecting the 12 tribes of Israel. There is a new kingdom, a new people that Jesus is gathering together. And now in this section, he begins teaching them how they're to live, what it looks like. And as I say, obedience being the mark of belonging to this new kingdom. It is important we notice this. He's not speaking to everybody there. We were told that people were coming from all over to be healed by him, to hear what he had to say. That's true. But as he speaks now, he isn't speaking to the great crowds that are there. He's speaking to some of the crowds that are there, which is to say, he's speaking to his disciples. Look at verse 20. Looking at his disciples, he said. In other words, there are people there that he isn't looking at. But he's speaking to his people. Those who have believed in him, those who have put their faith in him, those who have followed him, as we've said. Luke is big on this idea of believing and faith and following, as we've seen. In the next chapter, chapter 7 and so on, we'll see lots of examples of people believing and having their faith and being saved and healed. Jesus is speaking to those who believe. He isn't speaking to all the crowds. That's quite important because he's not telling us here how we become part of that kingdom. We've talked about that, we'll talk about it again, but that's not what Jesus is explaining here. He's telling us, since we are part of this new kingdom, since we are these new people of his, how we're to live. And this is important because sometimes people read this passage and they see a list of instructions, if you like, that they think if they follow these things, then somehow they'll be right with God. Somehow they'll be saved. Somehow they'll become part of this new kingdom. And that's not what Jesus is saying. What Jesus is saying is, since you are part of this new kingdom, this is how you're to live. Well, that's the first thing to be clear on. Don't misunderstand this. Don't think that this is a checklist to how to get into the kingdom. Rather, this is for those in the kingdom, how they are to live, how they might and know that they belong there. Obedience is the mark of belonging to the kingdom. And he teaches in this section how their attitudes and their actions and their words are to be shaped and changed. We see it firstly in these their attitudes, the way they think, the way they respond. We commonly call them beatitudes, statements about being, about blessing. We know those famously from Matthew's Sermon on the Mount, where they reflected you, but they're different in this version. This is a different sermon delivered in a different place. But we are told about them being blessed. but also he has these woes. Blessings and warnings. Blessings and woes. And if you were, perhaps when we go through things like this, when we take time to delve into the text, it means that we move fairly slowly through the text. So it's some months since we were in chapter 2, isn't it? If you were just reading this end to end, you'd have just finished chapter 2 10 minutes ago and it would still be fresh in your mind. But in chapter 2, Mary, as she responds to what God is doing in what we commonly call the Magnificat, announces blessings and woes. God has scattered those who are proud and shown his mercy to those who fear him. He's brought down rulers but lifted up the humble. He's filled the hungry with good things but sent the rich away empty. Blessings and woes. The same as here. What is it to be blessed? It's just that everything's going well for you. Sun's shining this morning. You're baking an egg for breakfast. You're going home to roast beef. Is that all it is to be blessed? No, not at all. Because look here, the situations that Jesus says, are these people are blessed in. Blessed are you who are poor, who are hungry, who are weeping when people hate you. No, it's not just outward things, is it? It's not just nice circumstances. But this blessing is the deep joy that comes from knowing God's favor, from being a part of his kingdom. And we must say that as we read this, it's so counterintuitive, isn't it? Blessed are those who are poor and who are hungry and who are weeping and when people hate you. Now, if I'd asked you when we came in, what does it look like to be blessed? Those probably aren't the answers you would have given, are they? So we must say that what Jesus is saying here is so counterintuitive. It goes against what we expect. And it must mean that Jesus is looking beyond simply their circumstances here and now and saying something, there is something bigger and deeper and greater in store. He is looking beyond just the temporary and the now, but looking with an eternal perspective. Looking with confidence in God. And so that's a change of attitude. But also here we're to see there's a change of action. And Jesus lays this out for us, doesn't he? Here he is in verse 27. I'm telling you who hear me, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who ill treat you. Love, do, bless, pray. Those are given in the present tense, implying that they're an ongoing thing. The persistent, habitual behavior of those who are in the New Kingdom is that this is what they do. It's not a one-off. It's not I can tick the box because I once prayed for somebody who doesn't deal properly with me. But these are patterns of behavior. These are habitual. This is what we're called to. And we're called to display love. And who is it that we're to display love to? Well, we're told here that this, it's not to those who deserve it. It's not to those who are nice to us. It's not giving to people who we think are going to give back to us or lending to those who will repay. The kind of love that we as members of this new kingdom are called to is crazy. It's to give to the people you know would never give back to you. It's to lend to the people you know have got no chance of repaying and no intention of. It's to show love to those who hate you. If you do something kind for someone, and someone else hears about it, I don't know, you've lent someone your home because they've been flooded out or whatever it is. Their car's broken and you've lent them your car, whatever it is. Good things. I'm not against that. Don't get me, misunderstand me. But then your mate says to you, "Oh, that was really kind what you did." And you say, "Oh, it was nothing. They would have done the same for me. It's nothing. They once helped me out when I had. So the least I could do. They're a good friend of mine." Now, none of those are bad things. But understand that if you're saying those things, those answers, you are not showing the kind of love that Jesus talks about. Because the kind of love that Jesus talks about makes no sense at all. There is an ordinary love, an ordinary kindness, an ordinary goodness. It is right. Don't misunderstand that. Don't twist my words here. We ought to be good to people. We ought to be good to people we like and who like us. But this kind of love that Jesus is calling to us to, this unique Christian love, is to be a love for those who won't reciprocate because they're unwilling or they're unable. Suppose you live in a house and you've got two neighbours next door to you. And one is, they're a lovely couple. Oh, do you know, you're such a nice guy. You're always chatting to them over the wall. And it's just lovely. And the people on the other side, they're obnoxious. As soon as you hang the washing out, they're lighting fires in the garden. They'll come along in that beautiful copper beech tree that you've planted there and is growing up. It's lovely. It's shade in the summer. It's got this wonderful shape to it. And you wake up early one morning and they've taken a chainsaw to it. And not only have they chainsawed the tree, but they've dropped it onto your side of the lawn. They're throwing parties till 3 o'clock every morning. I can say these things because I live in a house and I've got no neighbours, okay? But but you know there's something I'm talking about. And you've got those two neighbours on either side of you. Now it's perfectly natural that you're friendly with these people. Of course you are. They're not very well, you pop around and, you know, pick up the bread and milk from the shop for them. You invite them over for dinner and they invite you over for dinner. Love is not acts of kindness that you do for them, says Jesus. Love is acts of kindness that you do for them. Do you see the difference? The ones who don't deserve it, the ones who throw it back in your face. That is the standard that Jesus holds out to us as Christian love. And it doesn't make sense, does it? And it's deeply convicting to us. This obedience is seen in our attitudes, the change of heart that is counterintuitive and looks beyond our circumstance. It's seen in our actions, our love. It's seen as well in our words. And that's drawn out in the latter part of this. Out of the overflow of the mouth, of the heart, the mouth speaks. Your mouth shows what your heart is full of. If your words are kind, build up others, and are truthful, if they are humble words, it is because that's what your heart is like. If your words are bitter and drag other people down, if your words gossip, if your words are boastful, it's because that's what your heart is like. Jesus is saying that what comes out shows what's on the inside. And he illustrates that by saying that a tree shows what's going on by its fruit. No good tree bears bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. The thing that's on the outside shows what's going on the inside. The fruit shows what the root is. A long time ago, we lived in a little house in Cardiff, and we were having a discussion about the way garlic grows. I was trying to persuade Rose that garlic grows on bushes, you see. Garlic doesn't grow on bushes like fruit, does it? But she came home from work one day and looked out into the garden, and there in the garden was this, what we'd always presumed was a fuchsia bush, but there hanging off it were these great heads of garlic that had been sellotaped on. You see, you can't fake it. It's not real, is it? The fruit shows the reality of what's underneath. Garlic doesn't grow on fuchsia bushes. Short of sellotaping it on anyway. The fruit shows the root. The outside shows the reality of the inside. The mouth speaks what the heart is full of. And in all this kind of ethical instruction in our attitudes, our thoughts and our actions, our deeds and our words, Jesus is calling us to be people of integrity rather than hypocrites. Hypocrite is a play actor, someone who puts on a mask to take on another role. And Jesus is very clear in his condemnation of hypocrisy. And we're called to be people who are men and women of integrity. That the outside reflects the inside. Interesting, isn't it? Jesus says not to judge and you won't be judged, not to condemn and you won't be condemned, and to forgive and you'll be forgiven, and to give and it'll be given to you. And so those people want to hold Jesus' teaching as if he's some kind of great moral teacher, but without any reference to God. But understand that this is not just a model for how humans interact with each other. Don't judge and you won't be judged. Well, who is doing the judging that he's pointing to? Whose condemnation are we to be avoiding? Whose forgiveness are we to be seeking? Whose giving do we long for? It is God's, isn't it? And so the Christian life, the life of those who are in the kingdom, is a life lived conscious of God. Conscious of God, and therefore men and women in integrity. We're to be, we are told, that the student becomes like the teacher, verse 40. And he's speaking to his students, his disciples. And he is the teacher that we're to becoming more and more like. And he illustrates it then with this wonderful story about the carpenters. There's two carpenters, you see. Jones and Jones. Family carpentry business. Jesus knows about carpentry. And one of them's got a bit of dust in his eye, a splinter. Ever a splinter in your eye? Dreadful. And that needs care and concern. And his brother comes over to look at it. And where's the one chap's got this splinter in his eye? Well, the text says a plank in your own eye. The word that's used is the same word that you'd use to talk about the kind of main beam that holds up the ridge of your house, you know, the roof beam. And so there's the chap with a splinter, and it really hurts. And there's the other guy comes over to help him out with a beam hanging out of his eye. No, it's a ridiculous image. Jesus wants you to giggle when you think about it. Why are you looking at the splinter in his eye and paying no attention to the beam in your own? How can you say to your brother, "Brother, let me take the speck out of your eye," when you're not even aware of the beam in your own eye? Hypocrite! First take the plank out your eye, and then you'll be able to see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Notice what this isn't saying. It isn't saying it doesn't matter about him. Worry about yourself. Because actually having a speck in your eye, your splinter in your eye, is a bad thing, isn't it? And if someone has something in their eye, then the loving thing to do is to remove it. So Jesus isn't saying that doesn't matter. What he's saying is we have to humble ourselves first. We have to remove the plank from our own. We have to recognize our own sinfulness, our own inadequacy, our own shortcoming before turning to him. Love deals with his splinter. But it does deal with a great piece of 4x4 first. It's integrity contrasted with hypocrisy in our attitudes and in our actions and in our words. And then Jesus sums it all up in verse 46 and following. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I say? Obedience is the mark of belonging to the new kingdom. But here's the question. Obedience to whom? Jesus doesn't say obedience to God is the mark of belonging to the new kingdom. He says obedience to me. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I say? And then he goes on about hearing his words and putting them into practice, or hearing his words and not putting them into practice. Jesus is claiming to be the lawgiver. He's claiming to be God. He's saying, will you follow me? Are you hearing what I say and doing it? He's got this little progression going on here. He says about those who call me Lord and then come to me and then hear my words and then do it. Calling him, coming to him, hearing him and doing it. And as you progress through those, they become increasingly demanding. It's very well to say Jesus is Lord, isn't it? You can fake that. It's a bit more demanding when you start coming to him. It becomes even more demanding when you're hearing him, listening. Friends, by the very fact that you're sat here this morning as the Bible is being unfolded to you, I can say you're at that stage. You are hearing Jesus' words. It's great. But Jesus says that ain't enough. The test of whether or not you belong to him, not the thing that makes you belong to him, but the test of whether or not you belong to him is your obedience to him. You're doing what he says. You're putting it into practice. If you put it into practice, he talks about a man who is building on strong foundations. And if you don't put it into practice, he says you are building on shaky ground. Friends, you are uniquely privileged. Right here, right now, Jesus' words are being laid out for you. Don't underestimate that. But the question is, what will you do with them? And what you do with them indicates who you are, who you're following, what your hope is in. Obedience is the mark of belonging to the new kingdom. What's the motivation? Why would we do this? Well, disciples, students are to be like their teacher. We want to be like our teacher. We are kingdom people, if we are kingdom people. We are followers of him. We want to serve him out of love and gratitude, not because we think we can earn favor with him, not because we can get brownie points from him, because we are conscious of all he's done for us. That God himself has taken on human form and humbled himself and become obedient to death, even death on a cross, died in our place. And so not because we have to, but because we're glad to, we take his words and we put them into practice in our life. Do we get it right all the time? Absolutely not. The standard that Jesus calls us to is incredible, isn't it? We've just seen some of that. And so falling short of it, as we do again and again, we come back to him, confessing and asking forgiveness and receiving it freely and starting all over. This passage is not telling us how we enter the kingdom, but this passage is telling us that obedience is the mark of belonging to this new kingdom. Father, I pray that you would so take Jesus' words and apply them that we would hear and obey, we would do them, but also we would examine ourselves to know whether or not we are his people, whether or not we're in his kingdom. I pray, Heavenly Father, that your people here would be marked out by that outrageous love. That scandalous love that loves enemies and those who mistreat us and those who would never reciprocate. But it's so very visible in this community in which you've placed us. I pray it in the name of Jesus. Amen.